This is Talk at 10. It's your daily interview program on Marfa Public Radio. I'm Tom Michael, and I'm talking today about the Marfa Dialogues. I'm joined in the studio by the executive director of the Ballroom Marfa, Fairfax Dorn, and also the publisher of the Washington Spectator, Hamilton Fish. Both of them have teamed up once again to bring Marfa Dialogues, Politics and Culture of Climate and Sustainability, a weekend-long event here in Marfa. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
The symposium, I'm just reminding our listeners, 2 years ago in 2010, there was Marfa Dialogues. It was related to border and border politics. And it also, there was an opening, I believe it was called Immaterial back then.
Oh, wait, actually, let me correct that. In Lieu of Unity.
I'm sorry, In Lieu of Unity.
Yes, yes.
Was the exhibit. Thank you. It was the first symposium series with art and music and more. And here we are again 2 years later. Is this now a schedule? A two-year schedule?
Well, you know, we started 2 years, as you mentioned, ago on the border conference, and I think Fairfax and I came to this through a mutual route. We love of this area, this town, this region. She, of course, has pioneered the great Contemporary Arts Center Ballroom here in Marfa, which has a reputation that extends back to New York, where I live most of my time, and also to the West Coast. And we felt that with my interest in journalism and social and political themes, and her interest in extending the dialogue that the arts community was reflecting in the work that they were doing at Ballroom, that there was a natural alliance. And, of course, where better to express this interest than the great Marfa, Texas. So we had our border conference. We both felt that it was had a very propitious start, and we wanted to continue the tradition. We both have other jobs, and our respective institutions are taxed by the schedules that we normally have, so we felt that we probably shouldn't do it on an annual basis, that we should try to do it every 2 years. And we felt that this time around, we should tackle what increasingly seems like the great challenge before us, which is global warming and the issues associated with climate change.
Hamfish and Fairfax Dorn, our guests today, talking about the Marfa Dialogues. I wanted to walk through the weekend, but first I wanted to ask you, Fairfax, mm-hmm. following up on what Ham said, this Carbon 13 show, and there'll be an opening on Friday night at 6, dovetailed very nicely into this year's dialogues. How long have you been planning this program?
I mean, Carbon 13 came about almost about 2 years ago when I was introduced to David Buckland, the curator of Carbon 13 in London at the Tate Modern, when we had a project over there. And I've been thinking about after we produced, you know, In Lieu of Unity, I was already thinking, and also when we had the Marfa Dialogue dealing with the border, I was thinking about, okay, our next subject should probably need to focus on climate change and all those issues that surround it. I knew we wanted to do a show, an exhibition at some point on these issues on the environment. And so after engaging David, I knew it was going to take some time to develop to do it correctly, because we wanted to, with the help of the Rauschenberg Foundation, we were able to commission almost all the works.
These are commissioned works almost entirely.
Exactly, and which is extremely exciting and risk-taking at the same time. But that's like sort of the beauty of what we do at Ballroom Marfa. So I think Ham and I had a big discussion. Do we do this, and, you know, do we have the Marfa Dialogues independently of the exhibition opening or together? And I think we were resolved to making it all happen at once, because we had an opportunity for the artists who are here creating the works now and the curator to bring them together with all of these fantastic participants that we're bringing to Marfa.
Not easy, but also kudos to your fine staff, too.
No, I mean, we could not do this without our staff, without Aaron Kimmel and Nikki Entner and J.D. DeFabio and Jessica and everyone, and Rosa, and incredible, and still everyone has, like, come together to make this happen. And it's taken a lot of planning, you know, and a lot of time.
And I think also we live in a small town here, and we sometimes forget, or it's easy to forget, what we're able to accomplish, even with the scale that we have. And one of the things that I think is distinctive about the dialogues, and which we're thinking about exporting to other parts of the country, is the particular conversation that emerges when you match artists, visual artists, artists who work in other media, with journalists, with academics, with people who whose focus and whose method of examination and articulation tends to not to be so much in the realm of the aesthetic, but both have very strong perceptions and very distinct perceptions, and the task is to build this interdisciplinary communication with the hope of really deepening our understanding of the questions that we're looking at. I think we've
and
made some
audience,
progress
and
there.
I think it's also about widening the audience, too.
Thank you, yeah. Marfa Public Radio.
Exactly.
Well, so interdisciplinary, but also kind of this is a conversation that we all should be having, scientists, artists, and whatever your job may be. This is something that we can only address together.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of power behind addressing it together, and especially intersecting. This was the initial inspiration, as we did with the border, but intersecting art with journalism in this way.
And activism.
A three-day symposium and gallery opening and more. Again, the schedule, just briefly, Friday, the opening of Carbon 13 at Ballroom Marfa, the latest exhibit, 6 to 8 p.m. There'll be a community dinner at the Capri, also a little bit further west down San Antonio Street from 8 to 10. On Saturday, of course, they make time for Marfa Lights festivities. At 1 o'clock, Rebecca Solnit will moderate the discussion of art and environmental activism. That'll be at the Crawley Theater. These are all first-come, first-served, by the way. At 3 p.m., Diana Liverman and John Nielsen Gammon at the Crawley Theater. Again, the discussion is climate change and the adapting environments. At 6, the celebrated author Michael Pollan, and he'll be talking with you, Ham, at the Crawley Theater. On Sunday, quickly, there'll be a brunch and guided nature walk at the Mims Ranch, which is just on the north end of Austin Street here in Marfa. Robert Potts and Bonnie Warnock will assist. At 1 p.m., Marfa Book Company, a reading by author Rebecca Solnit. At 3:30, a presentation by Tom Rand. He has interesting things to say on climate change. And at 8 o'clock, finally, a performance of This Clement World. This is a work in progress by a great artist named Cynthia Hopkins. She's Brooklyn-based, and we'll be talking to her later this hour. Well, that's a quick overview of the weekend.
Well, I also want to start with the community dinner is going to be catered by Rocky Barnett.
Oh, nice choice.
And he has actually been working very hard. We're like, can we create a dinner that's locally sourced food? So
really,
yes.
Would that just be pecans and peppers and chickens?
There's a rule that's locally sourced food, I guess, is within a 500-mile radius. We're not quite sure. We're expecting avocados and watermelon or Pecos cantaloupes and Texas Gulf, Texas. I mean, there's a lot of things that we're getting that will be locally sourced. But anyway, we're trying goat cheese, the local goat cheese that's made here in Marfa, and produce as well, so which is exciting. We're trying everything about the weekend. We're really trying to shift our own the way we do things as well, and pay more attention.
I should also say that you're one of the few institutions in town that has a solar array on the top of your roof.
We are. We're very Green Mountain Energy. Great company, and they were generous enough to. We apply. I think it's called the Texas Sun Club. Any nonprofit can apply to it, and we applied. I don't know how many years ago, but it was at least 4 years ago, and we were able. We were awarded this solar panel, which pretty much cuts our emissions in half, and and also economy, I mean, like economically is much more affordable as well for us.
Locally sourced food. I spoke to a listener, Chase Lindley, who's picking baby tomatoes, I think, during this interview. Hello, Chase. For this meal.
Yes.
Great. So that's the community dinner on Friday after the opening, Carbon 13. We've been talking about the opening quite a lot. Aykroyd and Harvey, Amy Balkin, Erica Blumenfeld, David Buckland, of course, was our guest yesterday. Adrian Colburn, really great artist, Anthony Gormley. Congratulations on that piece, as well as the architect, Sanan Prasad. So even Ham mentioned Fairfax's interdisciplinary approach, but even in your Carbon 13 show, you have an architect, a performance artist, and a more traditional visual artist as well.
When working with, you know, David invited these artists, and as I was working with him, I just sort of encouraged as much diversity as possible. And I think he's done that brilliantly. I mean, what it attracted me to David in the first place was his program that he founded, Cape Farewell. And I thought it was an interesting match in terms of the way he brings artists and writers and musicians and scientists. Is something that I also see what Ballroom does as well, and I thought it would be an interesting match in terms of us working together.
You know, I think it's important to maybe stand back a step, look at this weekend in the context of what's going on right now in the country. We have two national parties convening their respective conventions, pouring vast amounts of money into shaping their message, defining their perception of what the priorities are in this country. And I think it'll be striking for people who are aware of the drama underway with climate change that neither party is going to make any mention at all of the environmental challenges that we face.
Energy policy, if you look at the platforms of the different parties, there's huge differences there. But still, that may be the case, Ham, that neither address that environmentally.
I mean, I think there are incremental differences, and obviously there will be Republicans who support conservative positions and Democrats who oppose them. But taken together, this issue of the global challenge that we face, which is a survival challenge in this century, has not filtered up to the level of discourse that you're going to hear from the national leadership. Now, what is interesting is that underneath that radar, mid-sized communities throughout the country who are managed by a certain class of city manager, in some instances professionalized public representation, they are slowly but steadfastly involved in moving the priorities in their communities away from a single dependency on oil and toward lower emissions with the purchasing that they make for vehicles for the community.
So some examples of that, Ham, might be the buses in some communities.
Low-emission buildings, zero-emission buildings, buildings with the goal of energy self-sufficiency, harnessing renewable energy resources in the community, encouraging residential and commercial members of the community to adapt to these technologies, providing different kinds of economic incentives for people so that they can justify these investments on an economic basis as well as the basis of social benefit. So in a way that hasn't really been adequately reported, the country is in a very slow but discernible way making a move toward a society that is less addicted to big oil. Now, you look at Germany, for example, which just this past month, for the first time in its history, passed the 50% standard in a extraordinary achievement nationwide. 50% of the energy consumed in Germany this summer was supplied by renewable energy sources.
And that's a vastly industrial area with the Ruhr Valley, and it's not like they don't need, they couldn't use oil for all of their industrial activities.
No, it's the dominant economy in Europe. The point for us, obviously, we're different societies from Germany and from some of the other countries that have made a big investment. China, of course, it's well known, making a huge investment in renewables. And obviously, we have different priorities. We have more resources in fossils. But looking to the future, it's the conversations like the one we hope to encourage this weekend.
And I think, like, Tom Moran will also expand on this idea of low carbon economy and how to achieve that with, you know, different clean tech, you know, companies that we can invest in and actually move this.
Tom Rand is a entrepreneur, venture capitalist,
visionary, yes.
And you know, you heard this buzzword a couple of years ago that the Silicon Valley is moving toward the green economy, and
right.
And so he would be a representative of
Yeah, and he's coming. He will be talking on Sunday at the book company 3:30.
That's right.
Yes, and hopefully will inspire us to sort of think about how we can invest in this sort of low carbon effort. And I think that's, I mean, like, if you think about history, oil was a major economy boom, you know, for our country. And I think clean tech can be the same, you know, renewable energy and clean tech companies can be the same. We all want, you know, clean air. We all want clean water. We want the same things. And in order to have that, we have to sort of, like, start investing in it.
Let me ask a kind of a general question about this crisis. What's interesting to me is the time element and the scope. Scope is either small or large, and everyone says, well, this is large. Yet the time is urgent. It's hard to address something that's both large and urgent.
Well, you see this played out very specifically in the – so thus far the failed attempts at the international level to strike some kind of global deal – climate change,
going back to the Kyoto conventions.
The new major polluters, of course, are what we used to think of as third world countries, which are the dynamic developing societies in the world today: China, India, to a lesser extent Brazil, but still formidable. So they're caught in the tension of heeding the demand to adapt their economies to renewable technologies and lower impact energy policies, but at the same time, they have huge populations they're trying to serve. They're trying to emerge on the world stage, and there's a tremendous tension there. And that's one of the reasons that we haven't really been able to successfully adopt a global strategy.
Ham, is it awareness? Is it or is awareness not the issue now? Are we past that point? Is it strength of our leaders? Is it policy, a smart policy? What is it?
I think myself, you're asking me personally, I think that there has been a very deceptive, concerted effort on the part of the energy lobby in this country to dissuade Americans of the validity of global warming and the threats posed by climate change.
So it still is an information battle in some respects,
I think,
too.
So.
And Fairfax, too. Mm-hmm. I was wondering... Again, this is both large and urgent, which is maybe even difficult to tackle, and I know a lot of the participants will be addressing that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the 3 o'clock Saturday symposium at the Crowley Theater. Again, this is free, and it's with Diana Liverman and John Nielsen Gammon. The title is Climate Change and Adapting Environments.
Yes, we're very fortunate to be able to bring these two brilliant professors to Marfa. Diana Liverman is a good friend of David Buckland, and he introduced us to her. And she's a professor at the University of Arizona, and she I think manages the institute, an environmental institute in Arizona. And John Nielsen Gammon is he's a professor at Texas A&M. And also the Texas State climatologists. And they have put an agenda together. They've been talking about what they're going to, about their discussion. And I'm looking forward, it's more about, like, this is sort of like the science behind climate change. And they will talk more about that.
John Nielsen Gammon, a nonpartisan.
Right.
And his work has been cited by quote-unquote both sides in this information battle that Ham was discussing. But I think a great source, especially looking specifically at our climatology here in Texas and the changes that we can see in writ large.
Well, and the patterns have been that we're getting – the state is getting hotter and hotter, and water keeps evaporating more and more and more. And then the drought becomes, you know, more of a concern, and we're seeing that within our own water supply and agriculture. So – and I was inspired. I read a fantastic article. I think it was in Texas Monthly this summer in July. It was all about his sort of point of view and what he's trying to hit – the message he's trying to get across.
Again, Ham Fish here, along with Fairfax Dorn. We're talking about the Marfa Dialogues. We've stepped through some of the events. I wanted to say, of course, Saturday, so many people are excited about the author Michael Pollan coming. There was a man down in Terlingua who found inspiration in him and wanted to make sun-baked bread and bring it up here to give it to Michael that he made in his solar oven. So he certainly has struck a nerve, and especially in this area.
Yeah, and I believe he inspired another, you know, part of the program is also going to the Mims Ranch, which is funded by the Dixon Water Foundation, and they're also a supporter of the Michael Pollan talk that will happen with Ham Fish. But Robert Pott said that they were inspired by Michael Pollan's chapter, I think it was chapter 8 in the Omnivore's Dilemma, about how to manage your land. Properly, like in terms of agriculture and people. And
how did you bring him about?
Well, I mean, I think when we were thinking about climate change, it encompasses so much more than just the idea of the weather and what that does to the environment. It's also, Ham, it came about that sustainability is a big part of climate change. And so I think we just, Hamilton Fish thought about that a little bit further. And I don't know, Ham, do you want to expand on how we brought in Michael?
There with Marfa, there are always a lot of dimensions. He wanted to come to Marfa. He'd heard so much about it. His wife, Judith, is a wonderful painter in the Bay Area. Michael has a wonderful personal story in which he will describe what I think is, in a sense, a kind of essential journalistic journey, where he didn't really start out as a climate person or even as a food person, but he had that driving curiosity, and in his experience as an amateur gardener, he encountered in that space of a private garden a microcosm of all of the issues and concerns which eventually would animate the long list of extraordinary books that he's written mm-hmm. over the last decade, which have really disproportionately shaped our thinking nationally on food questions, food policy, how the government can do a better job of ensuring food safety, of providing equitable distribution of food, of ensuring the quality of our food, and of farming in a way that preserves the integrity of the land, that puts behind us, we hope, at some point in the near future, the scorch-and-burn style of farming that we see at agribusiness in all levels, and promotes sustainability, promotes localism, promotes, as Fairfax was saying before, the consumption of food products that are produced at a local level, at a regional level, on a seasonal basis, and to try to just introduce a food consciousness. A few subjects really come up that you can think of that have a wider, deeper impact on a larger number of people than food. We all, between sleep therapy and food consciousness, we've pretty much covered everyone in the population.
And then you just say that agriculture contributes to about 30% of the climate issue right now.
Yeah, as Michael has pointed out in his work, the as it relates in particular to the theme of the ballroom show this weekend, a little known fact about the aggregate of the contribution of different sources to the overall problem of carbon emissions, agriculture is responsible for a third. And there are, as Michael has developed in his work, a variety of strategies that can be adopted by the food producers to not only minimize and eventually eliminate the carbon production, but also to turn it around to our advantage. So he is, I think, you know, if you look at the way the formation of public values and you look at the way these issues develop, there are these early warning figures who frequently in history don't get the credit for having paved the way. But the work that he's doing now on this question, not as it is limited entirely just to the specific question of food, but as he has explored the ramifications of all of the dimensions of the food system to environmental issues, to the national economy, to the question of public health, all of these strands are being gradually developed in this extraordinary body of work, and there are all kinds of people that he has inspired to pick up and go further and deeper. So I think we'll look back on this period as really being a period of extraordinary vitality and importance in the long run as down the road, hopefully, we adopt some of the recommendations that he's developed.
Hamilton Fish and Fairfax Dorn, our guest here on Marfa Public Radio. We've been talking about the Marfa Dialogues and some of the key points of this weekend. Again, I wanted to remind you that these events at the Crawley Theater are free and open to the public, and it's just a first-come, first-served seating. You can find the full schedule at ballroommarfa.org. You can listen to earlier interviews at marfapublicradio.org with links to the ballroom site. And for our far-flung listeners, we've arranged with Ballroom Marfa to live broadcast these symposiums, and we're pleased to be able to do that well, including the readings on Sunday with Rebecca Solnit and Tom Rand. Ham, you're just back in town. What's it like to be back?
It's just so breathtakingly beautiful here. You know, we were driving from Austin yesterday, and we were pretty tired. My wife and coming from New York, and I'm with Eliza, who was a intern here at the early days of Marfa Public Radio, and there have been a lot of flights and fatigue, and they wanted to turn after Stockton and come down through Alpine and save the half hour, and I was driving in and said, you know, we're gonna go through Valmarais and up through Fort Davis,
through the Davis Mountains.
I want you to see, I want to come back into Marfa through that decompression, and it was mesmerizingly beautiful. There was it was sort of a cloudy late afternoon, and but the there's been obviously quite a lot of water recently because there's a huge amount of far west Texas green ground cover everywhere.
It's about time we changed the color of the landscape.
A lot of wildflowers. There was quite a lot of evidence of the tragic fire that roared up through Fort Davis, and I hadn't seen that firsthand because I haven't been out since last summer. And but the just that peace that settles over you as you the plains open up and you take that stretch down from Fort Davis to Marfa. And went through a couple of rain clouds and big rainbow, and came into town, and it was pretty great. Things seem to be sort of in place the way I left them 4 years ago. I went by the Christopher's house, and the Siamese cat was still out in the lawn, pretty much where it was when we drove away last time. So it's a magical place.
Well, I have nothing more to add to that beautiful picture. I just wanted to thank Hamilton Fish and Fairfax Dorn, and good luck with the Marfa Dialogues.
Thank you.